this is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicles, and I want to welcome you to another episode of Stories of the Supernatural. Wherever you find us, whether it's a video or podcast on your favorite platform, please like and subscribe to us so that you can get notification of when a new show is released. You can also find us on major social media platforms. If you go to MiamiGhostChronicles.com, you can find links to the videos or MP3 files, which you can download and enjoy without commercial interruptions. If you're into classic horror, ghost, and adventure stories, I narrate Nightshade Diary, and you can find links at NightshadeDiary.com. If scary stories are your bag, and listening to encounters with cryptids, ghosts, dogmen, and other weird creatures sends a shiver up your spine, then go to SupernaturalStorytime.com for links to our weekly podcasts. Noteworthy news about the paranormal world, true crime, conspiracy stories, and anything that is just plain weird can be found at eerie.news or visit the Stranger Than Fiction Stories tab at MiamiGhostChronicles.com. Please subscribe to my newsletter on Substack. Just go to mppelliser.com for a link. I want to thank you for being part of my audience, and I think you are all wonderful.
Hi, how's everybody doing? Good. I'm doing good. Yeah, getting ready to, you know, I'm going to give myself away. I'm going to a very vanilla concert for Johnny Mathis. Everybody's like, what? He's still alive? Yeah. Believe it or not, I like to sometimes go listen. I like rock. I like that, but every once in a while, you know, I like those singers that were famous for ballads, and God knows Johnny Mathis is one of them. And it's one of those things that you're like, I can't wait for next year because he might not be here next year. He must be, you know, I don't want to kill off the entertainer, but same thing. A couple of weeks ago, I went to see Willie Nelson. Same thing. I was like, you know what? Let's go see him this year. I might not be able to see him the year after that and the year after that, by the way, which he did like a great concert. And I think he's 89 going on 90. And he walked on. Believe it or not, I've seen a couple of entertainers that you could tell that they had to be assisted on and off the stage. But no, Willie walked on and Willie walked away. And he was great. It was a great little concert that he did. So I'm going to go later on. That's what I have in the works. You know, I call it my ultra vanilla concert tour because it's like, oh boy. But anyway, guys, and then everything is good here. Everybody had asked me, you know, as far as, you know, the chickens, they're good. You know, I got to do a little video that we redid their coop outside and the thing with the predators and yeah. And I had a bald eagle the other day and that concerned me because bald eagles will take your chicken like and leave. So yeah, all that farm life. That's what I call farm life. But anyway, guys, let's get on to the good part. And the good part is who the guest is for tonight. This is the first time this gentleman has been on Stories of the Supernatural. His name is David Childers, and he's an actor, a speaker, photographer, and he is the co-founder of It's Haunted Network. David has always been drawn to the world of the paranormal. Never has he questioned the existence of the spirit world. One major factor was growing up with family members who had certain gifts and abilities. Over the years, he's had the pleasure to investigate and film with so many of the top experts around the world and to be viewed on over 50 different platforms. Some of the experts and shows that he's had the amazing opportunity to work with are Stormy Daniels of Spooky Babes, Paranormal Show, Ashley Goodwin from Ghost Hunters International on Sci-Fi, Jack Osborne of Fright Club on Discovery Plus, Zach and Aaron from Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel, and many more. Help me welcome him. How are you doing today, David?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So I'm going to ask you, even though you kind of alluded to it in your bio, mm-hmm. How did you get into the paranormal or stay involved in the paranormal? Was it childhood experience or what was it?
Yeah, I mean, that's how it all started. It was a childhood experience. I remember whenever Crocodile Dundee came out. It was on TV, right?
So, yes.
I had some snake skin boots on. I was young.
Yes.
Probably 7, 8.
That's a knife.
Yes. Exactly. And I had snake skin boots on. I went and made me a Bowie knife out of wood, this and that. And I was outside playing like I was Crocodile Dundee. And mm-hmm. It was dusk, and my family's land in Vicksburg, Mississippi, it was part of the Civil War. So it was Civil War battleground. Basically, the whole town of Vicksburg was Civil War.
Yes, you're right.
And I looked over at the wood line, and I saw a full-body apparition of a Civil War soldier that had beard and Confederate uniform and everything. I ran inside, and I told my dad what was going on, and he just blew it off. He said, you're just seeing stuff, or this, that.
Yeah.
You got an imagination, but I know what I saw. It scared the heck out of me. It really did.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Then just from there, I started, I've always loved horror movies. I love scary stories, spooky mm-hmm. stuff. And sure. from then on, I just started reading books about, ghosties and stuff like that. And just went from there and started one team, Ghost Hunters Extreme. Started that. It was just us three guys. We saw the hype. It was whenever the paranormal shows just coming on, one paranormal show came on TV, and there were a lot of them on the internet. We're like, let's go try this thing, So we had a FLIR camera, a voice recorder. It was an analog voice recorder.
Right.
And just a digital camera, a big old Sony digital camera. We went out. Basically, we went to one location. It was a church. We went to a cemetery, and we were asking questions, and we had a Class A EVP come back of a female. And I was like, yes, three guys out there. Okay, look, now this something's going on with this. So just over the years, I ended up after that, everybody split apart. I started True Seekers Paranormal Research and Investigations. Then after that, end up getting with Spars Paranormal, and we created Delta Port Paranormal Project, which was like 100 members strong.
Wow. And
that was way too many people.
I was going to say, that's incredible. That's a lot of people in a group. By the way, and I'm not saying in a bad way. I'm saying in a good way, because usually you keep, people sometimes join the paranormal thinking it's like the shows all the time, and then they kind of get disappointed. So that you had that many members is great.
Yeah, it was totally insane. Then after that, I ended up starting Mississippi Paranormal Research Institute.
Okay.
That was going on for a long time. And whenever I moved up here to New Hampshire from Mississippi, I just completely just went solo, Don't have to worry about any drama or anything like that.
Ah, yes, paradrama, right.
Yeah, so I just went solo and just investigated with a lot of great people up in this area now.
Yes. I did that. That's how I started. I worked with a research foundation that just covered the entire state of Florida. Mm-hmm. And, they would throw stuff. It was like down in South Florida, they would contact me. Or if they were, because I was really good, I would that last moment somebody begged out, hey, Marlene, would you be willing to drive a couple of hours and help us out? But it was something exactly. I preferred being with a freelancer. Mm-hmm. And you get to work also with a lot of different groups and different people, and you network and stuff like that. So I get it. I know exactly what you mean.
Yep.
Because that's the thing. You talk to a lot of people that get interested in this when they're teenagers, and then they grow up and go, oh, forget it. It's only the hardcore people or the people that have really had an experience.
Yeah.
That kind of say, man, I know there's something there. I know it. It's not like I'm trying to convince anybody. Then. You do something with it?
Yeah.
So obviously now you had these paranormal groups, and then what happened from there? You started going into filming it or what?
Well, I mean, whenever I was back in part of True Seekers Paranormal, whenever I created that group, I think I filmed one time. That was my first ever experience being on TV. It was on A&E. It was called, I know y'all remember it, My Ghost Story.
Oh, that my God, yes.
Yes, that was like my first one. And I just fell in love with it, and it just went on from there. I mean, it just snowballed. It was just insane. Been on multiple, luckily, had the pleasure of being on multiple television shows and over the years, actually, I'll be filming for one next week. It's a brand new show. So,
what's the name of it? Can you say it? I'm not going to make okay. All right. Well, you know what? And I think the format, because I've been on a couple, I've been on Paranormal Survivor and Haunted Hospitals myself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that format of where you had the person retelling the story, and of course, they would have somebody act out that part. I think that storytelling part is very captivating. Yes. For audiences versus you see a team. Yeah, that's great. But when you have I'm going to say ordinary people living their lives and then they have this experience, people, the audience is going, hey, that could be me. You know, it was like, what? You know, you move into the old house or not the old house, or I went here, I went there, something followed me home. Yeah, that format, yeah. I think, is great.
Yeah, I love that group of people. They're amazing. I was blessed to help them out, try to doing casting calls, this and that, you know, producer mm-hmm. Tobin, he's a real good guy. And yeah, that whole Bristol Global Media is.
Yeah, I every once in a while I'll get casting calls like help us find somebody that fits this theme.
Right.
You know, and I just got one like maybe a month ago, and I reached out to some people and it's like, okay, you know, sorry, can't help you out. Because sometimes, you know, they want a certain scenario. How's that? Right. Based on the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you probably know which show I'm talking about then, but we can say it off the air, but
yes. Okay.
Yeah.
you know, it's one of those things where, you know, because I have thrown them, you know, sometimes a lot of leads, like you said,
yeah.
Like, yeah, I think this person might be able to help you, you know, contact them, you know, like hook up and you take it. And yeah, a couple of times yeah. It's worked out.
And see, the cool thing with the, like you said about the format of these shows, I mean, it gives people a chance to tell their story.
Yes. You
know? And it could be somebody out there that has the same experience and they don't know, they've dealt with it and they were able to resolve it. But this person that's telling their story now, you know, they're like, they don't know how to resolve it, how to, you know, help, you know, get help or something like that, you know.
Right.
It's definitely a good outreach.
Well, I think that, you know, depends on, you know, some people, you know, especially if they feel isolated and they, and I know that you see a program and you're saying, man, that sounds like me. And, you know, you actually, sometimes people are like afraid to come out with their experiences.
Yeah.
Because either people are going to think they're crazy or maybe even their family are going to blow back and they just keep it to themselves. And sometimes they see a program and they're like, oh, hey, you know what? Well, there's a group, you mean I can actually talk to somebody about this. Is that going to look at me and give me a weird look? Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, besides the scare factor, obviously a lot of people watch it mm-hmm. for the scare factor as in, wow, that's happening to them. That's great. I've never had that experience. Or in some cases, a cautionary tale. I'm sure you've had you've had that experience personally where people go some places to investigate. And what's there is kind of a little bit on the darker side or weirder. And they actually get something that comes home with them.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and maybe they were just legend tripping. They were even doing a paranormal, any investigation. They were just out there just to, hey, I'm here. Mm-hmm. And then they start having weird stuff happen at home.
Yep.
Have you had that personally happen to you?
I've had a couple of attachments in the past.
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, that was actually, 911, Paranormal 911. That was my first one. That was okay. Whenever I was a firefighter. Had an attachment of a little girl following me home from a wreck scene.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it's season one, episode six, The Chapel, I believe. Okay. That was the first one. And then the second one was on Haunted Hospitals. That was season two, episode 13.
Right.
That was the worst one. That it was at Kuhn State Hospital is where I got that from. It was the old abandoned hospital back in the day. That was definitely intense. I mean, it got to where it got so bad that that non-human entity.
Oh, it was a non-human? Oh,
yeah, boy. It basically just took me over. And before it was all over with, it was thoughts of suicide and all that at the hospital. I mean, it was intense. You'd have to watch the episode to get the full story on it.
Okay.
It's what I talk about a lot whenever I'm, you know, at these cons or air cons and stuff. That's I'll talk about my experience and what happened to me during that time as an investigator and getting that attachment. I mean, because you never know what you're going to get at these locations, even being
absolutely
warrior back in the day. You know, we used to go out. That's how we done it. We went out and we just did it, you know?
Right. And you didn't think like, oh, yeah, whatever. It's a dead person running around or whatever.
Well, we didn't know.
But it is.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. And we didn't even
except sometimes it's more than that.
Yep. True. Yep. And it's dangerous. It really is. So it's best to, that's what I tell people all the time. Try to find a credible team in your area, tag along with them, learn some stuff. And then, you know, you can break away and do your own thing.
Yes. Yes. I've had a lot of people. There was one guest I had. She says at the very beginning, when she was doing investigations, she said that she was in Michigan. Okay. Well, anyway, she went to one of these, you know, the areas where they have the old mansions, turn of the centuries that have come apart and people are basically redoing them. And she said that she had gone along with a friend of hers. So it was like two of them. I didn't know anything of anything. And supposedly it was haunted by a so-called ghost, somebody that lived there or whatever. But she says that, and by the way, I've said it before, a very lot of dark experiences sometimes happen in places like the cellar or the basements. I don't know why.
Well, she says because,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's because you rarely go down to these places.
Right. So. But it's like, it's not like your regular haunting. Mm-hmm. It's like whatever's there. The worst descriptions I've had of people having experiences usually are from there. Or they have a totally different entity that this is their area. You know, this is their territory.
Yep.
And you could go up above that ground and it's all good. Or, you know, even if you have a haunting, but once you go there, it becomes a different thing.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, she went in there and she's like, I didn't know anything. And she says that apparently it was an area like sub basement, but under the stairs where you came in to go into the big mansion. Mm-hmm. And they had already done some investigation. And she goes, I kind of did a confrontational kind of thing. Like, not really confrontational, but yeah. She says she got a horrible attachment from it because it was non-human. And what people don't understand is when you got a non-human entity that you confront, you're basically giving it an invitation.
Yep.
And she says that it took her, she had to bring in like everybody she could to help her get rid of it. And she says, I learned my lesson as far as going out there because she just was thinking she was dealing with a regular ghost. How's that?
Yeah. Right. She didn't know it was something like that. You know,
exactly. Which is what you were saying. It's like a cautionary tale. Sometimes when you see the programs, some people think, oh, maybe it's, you know, it's overdone. And it's like, ah, sometimes. Yeah. But a lot of times it's more accurate than you think as far as if you don't know what you're doing. How's that?
Right. Yeah. And it's different kind of energies. It's different kind of manifestations. I mean,
yes,
you really don't know. I mean, it's not just a human spirit, you know, it's mm-hmm. definitely, I mean, There's so many energies out there. I mean, hell, you can create your own haunting.
Sure.
And the stronger it gets, it could turn into something non-human. It could yes. be, you know, strong enough. And it could be, you know, I mean, nasty as hell. It could be something sure. good, you know.
Yes.
There's multiple things out there. It just mind boggles, man. You know, stuff back in the day were like, we're investigating. Actually sitting here think we're talking to, you know, human spirit. No, mm-hmm. We could be communicating with elemental. Communicating with creepers, watchers. I mean, there's so much difference.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? I've always been very, very extremely, let me underline that, wary of supposedly child spirits.
Yep.
Okay. Because I'm like, man, this is a Trojan horse right here. Because all of us immediately, when they identify, oh, it's a child's voice on an EVP, or supposedly some child died, and you know, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm not gonna say that doesn't, but I mean, this is if I had something malevolent and intelligent, want to find a chink in our armor, it's let's go through and disguise ourselves like a child.
Yeah.
Because people, hey, you're thinking, no, that's a kid, you know. And you know what? It's not the first time either that I've spoken to people who have sighted a child. In other words, they've had maybe they've seen a little kid or either full blown or running across or, you know, something that you can tell by the height. And they get into this idea that it's a child. And later on, they've seen it morph figure wise into something much taller or bigger.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, what? Exactly. In other words, yes,
it's going to try to whatever you can relate to, where you know where it could communicate with you, or either that just scare the hell out of you, you know, because a lot of manifestations out there, they just feed off fear, like watchers. You know, I call them watchers. They feed off of fear, you know.
Yes.
So and yes. that makes them a lot stronger.
Yes. And people don't realize that of all the energies, I think that it would like will feed it. That mm-hmm. negative, like raw fear kind of deal, is how it works. And I don't know, you know, people think sometimes that it's like, you know, the Hollywood version where you have stuff flying around. I go, sometimes they're more subtle. You start having bad nightmares, you know, in other words, cut you off from being able to sleep well, you know.
Yes.
Let's say you're sleeping, and then all of a sudden you start hearing noises out in the rest of the house, and it breaks up your sleep pattern. Yep. And that'll deteriorate a person really quick, not getting sleep or like being able to sleep for a few hours continuous.
Believe me, I know, because I'm going through that right now.
Okay, you got it. Okay, let's talk about that.
I can't tell the story, though, because it's going to be on the show.
Oh, my God.
But I can say that, yeah, it is draining 100%. Right. I mean, imagine just every night going to bed, waking up 1, 2, 3, 4 o'clock off and on because you feel like somebody's staring at you, you know.
Okay.
And it's hard. It totally is. It will wear you down in a heartbeat.
Yes, it does.
And especially whenever it goes on, you know, for a long period of time. And, you know, the bad thing is, in my experience, my case right here that's going on right now is still can't figure out what it is or who it is.
Really? How long has it been going on for?
About a year.
Say?
About a year.
A year?
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's none of my objects. None of my objects I have.
Because sometimes, you know, by the way, I'm glad you mentioned, because there's sometimes people, things start happening, especially in a place they've lived for, mm-hmm. and they never backtrack. And then when you start going back with them, they'll realize what's the triggering event or item or whatever, or visit, that they're like, wait, you're right. After XYZ is when little things started to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A year is a long time, David.
Oh, I know. It's all right. I got one of my friends coming up here, Connie Cohen. She's going to come up here and she's also a shaman and stuff like that. So she's going to come up here and she's going to, you know, cleanse the whole place for me. I've had it done before and it really didn't do anything. So Connie said, you know, she's going to use the shaman the way to do it.
And, well, you had it done with what, like a Judeo-Christian?
Yeah.
Like a blessing?
I've done it myself.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But, you know, everything would die down just a little bit, but then it just goes back.
God, I've heard that so often.
You know, and I'm not going to get into that because I don't want to give too much story, but she's going to come up here and she's going to help me and stuff and try to get this place taken care of. And yeah, I know it's none of the objects that I have in here. I have objects that have attachments or whatever that are haunted, I guess you would say. And I mean, they're all fine. They're all good. Like Lilith, of course, it's a doll, but it came from the Haunted Doll Museum. She was actually on Ghost Adventures.
Okay.
Whenever I filmed with them, you could see her in the background. It came from the Haunted Doll Museum there, but she's awesome. I mean, really, I feel like she's just protects me.
And how long have you had her?
Lilith, I've had Lilith for like 2.5 years.
Okay, so that's, forget it. She's been around for a while.
Oh yeah, she's been around for a long time. You know, that's one of my that's my girl. I wouldn't get rid of her at all. You know,
now I'm like, let me ask you, could you have had anybody visiting your home that might have left something behind on purpose?
Now, I have a pretty good idea what actually sort of sparked it up.
Okay. All right.
And, you know, basically probably activity started showing up here whenever I started.
I'll be like, this is great. I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah, I'm 20. No, it's my friends Chris and Christina.
And it's like, yeah, all of a sudden it was like, oh, it's making its presence though.
We were just talking about the place being haunted, and then next thing you know, I hear the door and I'm like, but
it's like, man, this is really getting outrageous now.
I know, right? And it always happens like that too. I start talking about it and everything starts to spike up. So it's definitely interesting. But
so anyway, you kind of have your suspicions as the origin, in other words.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And I think it's going to be maybe two things. One's both of them. One of them's ancient. Definitely one of them's ancient. 100%. Right. And the other one is going to be human spirit. But I mean, she's good though. She's good. She just pops in every now and then and it's like, hey. But the other one's the one that really tortured me.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, you can hang out, but you can leave whenever you want. But those, the other ones that are not, they're like, they're not interested in leaving.
Exactly, 100%.
And how Let me ask you, is it just that feeling of getting watched, or have you had any bad dreams or anything, you know, where...
It's getting watched. There's a few more things that I really can't say, because that, you know...
Okay, so it's basic. You know what, if anybody's ever had a baby, they'll know what I'm talking about. Like, start going for a few days where you have to wake up every couple of hours.
Yeah.
And let me tell, and tell me what life is like as far as your endurance, because it just really does a number on you when you can't sleep straight through.
Oh, no.
And even then, or if you fall asleep, you'll only fall asleep like a little bit, but you're always like waiting to hear or feel or something. You're almost on guard, so you really don't drop down into deep sleep. That'll wear you down too. And is it only inside your house, or has it gone with you elsewhere? Or I don't want you to go away, or is it outside, or what?
It's inside and out. It's inside and out. That's why I'm going with the ancient theory. That's what Connie was telling me. She was like, that's what she was picking up on. So,
I was going to ask, well, I don't want to give away, if she had gotten any insight from where she's at, like, this is what's...
She has a pretty good idea of what it is.
Okay.
So, so whenever she comes up here, I'll let her do her thing and try to get rid of whatever it is.
So let me ask you, what happened? Did it just build up? Like, a year is a long time. Was it like it started off slow and then it picked up speed kind of deal?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's got stronger and stronger.
Wow. Has anybody ever come to the house and wigged out? You know, somebody like that comes to your house all the time. And then... They'll come and they'll go, whoa, what's going on here? You know, like they pick up and you're like, all right. Well,
I don't think it was really a pickup thing. You know, Chris, actually, the one's here right now. He stayed the night. Where did we come back from, Chris? What was that? Sleepy? No?
Sleepy Hollow.
Was it? No, what? No, it wasn't Sleepy. Yeah, it was. No, we went to Shanley. Okay, we went to Shanley. And he kept on trying to talk me into stopping by an antique shop. Okay. Like, we went by 8 of them, and he was like, yeah, let's go. And I talked him out of it. On the way back, he talked me into it. So we swing by one. I went in there and picked up a creepy Santa Claus.
And okay. I
mean, it was real creepy. It didn't have a beard. It had a flesh-colored beard. I don't know. It's so weird. But everything was fine. Chris never said anything. He didn't think anything was going on here. He woke up the next morning and he looked up and there were Santa Claus just looking in his face.
Oh,
it wasn't paranormal, but that right there, I mean.
It was like, I think you need to take that back. old Saint Nick was giving him the stink eye.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. So,
that's funny, because I have seen stuff with a Santa Claus that it's like, man, that's disturbing. Whoever made that up, you know, is like, what were we thinking of?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we did, my friend Vicky Bentley came over and we did an investigation here at the house. And we got some interesting stuff. And after that, I got actually, you know, Chris and a few more other people do a virtual investigation. So basically what I did, it was live. I think it was on StreamYard, but we didn't do it live. But it was like 5 or 6 of them. They sit here. I left the camera rolling. I went to go investigate a place for about 3-4 hours. I came back and they were still investigating whenever I came back. I turned the camera, the screen around. I was like, what'd y'all get? And they said they heard disembodied voices. They saw one of the dolls moved. So the K2 meter steadily going off. So it definitely interesting. And that's probably the best way to do it too, as well.
Of course.
Do it virtual, you know?
Right. And you know what? And sometimes it's kind of boring if nothing happens, but it's just sit there and observe. Just like sit there.
Yep.
Not too much, and just let whatever. And you know what's really funny, though? I've heard, though, and I don't know the people that you left behind, that sometimes you'll have items there that they're good with you. But then with a bunch of people sit in that this is not their normal, hey, you're not David.
Right.
Now, then they start doing their own thing. It's just because it's not you. Like, you know, like a pet?
Yep.
That when it's you, they're okay. If somebody new hangs out too long and you're gone, and they all start almost, for lack of a better word, like activating.
Yep.
And you'll be like, what happened here? And it's like, normally they don't do that. And it's so when you know what? And I've spoken to people that I've spoken to some exorcists where they will say that certain items were done In other words, it's not an attachment per se, as in a spirit attached to the item, but the items were done in a place where there was ritual sacrifices. Like I had one lady I spoke to, she said there was a guy who was collecting, you know, those ancient masks, like from different South and Central American. Here we go. Oh, jeez. Okay. Yeah. Something like that. Sure.
He's like, everything in your apartment.
Yeah. Everything right. In my apartment.
Just, everything's just haunted. Let's just throw everything.
And let me tell you, and come to find out, a lot of these things, you know, because basically, you know, this is not mass manufacturing out of China. We're talking here like something that was done by an individual, whatever.
Yep.
And some of them are scary looking, but he says that later on, he started having this really huge problem because it turns out that unconsciously or consciously or because fate dictated, he was basically getting masks that had been in either rooms or places where they had been doing some type of occult practices. Mm-hmm. And basically the energy that was attached to these masks, not maybe even an entity per se, but just because they had been in these rooms.
Yeah.
Where these rites were practiced over, they had this really bad vibe attached to them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it could be leftover energy, any kind of energy.
Yeah, but it was very dark. It wasn't like, oh, it was in a shop somewhere and it was hanging there and nobody, you know, wanted it. And then before you know it, no, it was just, you know, how when the fabric of a place will get imprinted with something that repeats itself or, you know how like when you walk into a room and you can tell somebody just had an argument there, like you're like, okay. All right, you just two were having harsh words.
Yep, you can sense it. You can tell.
You can tell. Exactly. So let me ask you, have you ever gone on an investigation and found yourself like, man, I'm out of my depth on this?
No, not really.
No?
Here I am. But
okay.
Here I am. But other than that, you know, I really haven't read across something. Well, the Kuhn Hospital deal. Yeah, I mean, because I didn't even realize what was going on. I didn't even realize what was happening.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was totally out of my depth right there, you know. But I learned my lesson from that, 100%.
Right. That. And what was it? What was it, like an old hospital?
Yes, the Kuhn Hospital was actually, it's snowing outside. Kuhn Hospital, you can look it up, Google it. Kuhn Hospital, Vicksburg, Mississippi. And it was pre-Civil War hospital. The Sisters of Mercy were actually a part of it. Basically, they were a group of nuns, and they came from Baltimore right before the Civil War, like a year before, and they got down there to help out with smallpox and yellow fever outbreak. Mm-hmm. And it was also a psych ward. They would use a shock treatment, all kind. It was insane asylum. It was all kinds of stuff, and it was real. This hospital was real cool. Yeah, I had an aerial view of it because it was shaped like a cross.
Right.
Yeah, you can still find the pictures of it. It's torn down now. Thank God it's torn down. But it was just a lot of trauma that went on there. You know, it really was. I mean, back then they had cut people's legs and, you know, amputate them and all that and just throw them behind the building into a ditch. So,
yes. People don't realize, like, there, you know, that they had yellow fever outbreaks every once in a while, especially in the South. But in 1853, there was a very, very bad yellow fever outbreak.
Yeah.
That people, I mean, it's from New Orleans, all the southern states, they lost a lot of people. Let me ask you, have you come across, recently I wrote an article, this is over the University of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. That they were putting up some buildings, you know, they were digging. They were going to either put up a new building or their new parking lot, or they were digging.
Yep.
And they came across all this mass graveyard.
Yep, that was University Medical Center, I believe.
Yes, it was. Exactly. And,
it was thousands of graves supposedly they found.
Right, because originally, from what I understand, they were going first. They were going to do something like at the laundry area. I guess they have like a little laundry building. They were going to do something, and they dug up but they only found like 40 something graves.
Yeah.
All right. And it was like not a big deal. It was like 40 something. So what they did was they disinterred them and they reburied them in the area, you know, where people give their bodies over for science. Mm-hmm. The university has like a separate little cemetery where they bury these bodies once they're done with them. So they reinterred them, was 40 something. And that was okay. Well, that's done. But now, like what you said, they started digging up, and there's a slew of hundreds of, you know, people. And that at that time, that was a mental. It back then, it was an insane asylum. It wasn't.
Wow.
Yes, I mean later on the university, what would make it into the university, but back then, from like you said, around like Civil War times or post Civil War up to like I want to say like 1935, it was used strictly as an insane asylum. All right.
That's interesting.
And they, as a matter of fact, they've even. You know, and of course, this was only be the burials that were like in the 20s and 30s where they're trying to do a DNA match. You know, people will say, hey, I know my great grandfather ended up in that asylum. And they're trying sometimes to hook up to see if they find him. And there was one story which was really interesting. Here's this one guy. This is the 1920s out in Mississippi. I can't remember what the little town was. He's a moonshiner. Okay. He ends up, they kind of say, he was in a shootout. Bottom line, he ends up with only one arm, but he still plays the fiddle. All right. And around 1930, he has a run-in. They're kind of not clear, but again, I think it had something to do with the moonshine thing.
This
is Prohibition. This is the times of Prohibition.
Yeah, bootlegging.
Bootlegging, that kind of stuff. They kind of vague. He has a confrontation, but something happened there where all of a sudden he started getting paranoid, like really bad. Like that he couldn't sleep, was looking over his shoulder to the point that his family ended up committing him to that asylum.
What?
Yes. He says that he got, I don't know. And he was not an older guy. He was like in his late 30s, early 40s, something like that. He wasn't like a really, but something happened where he says, and I'm thinking this had to be in the woods somewhere, maybe where there was a still. And after that, he kept looking over his shoulder, like, you know, somebody that's been told we're going to get you kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't handle it. And like about 18 months after he was in the asylum, he died. And, you know, I wrote up on it. It's really interesting. I got a picture of him. And it's like, you know, some of the people that ended up, they have these stories that in and of themselves are really interesting. But yeah, but what you were saying as far as the some of these places, these hospitals have more to them than meets the eye.
Oh, heck yeah. Absolutely. 100%. I mean, there's so much trauma that went on there. There's so many mixed emotions that go on in hospitals. I mean,
yes.
Telling what kind of energy is in there, you know?
Sure, of course. And hey, that's sometimes things made the paperback back then. A lot of things overcrowded, understaffed. And the truth is, a lot of the families were like, hey, I'm out of here. As a matter of fact, that guy that I told you about, that his family had lived there. Mm-hmm. When he died, they couldn't get a hold of them because they had left to Arkansas.
Oh.
And he didn't leave a forwarding address kind of deal. And it's almost like some of the families were like, in a way, I hate to say it, they were like, thanks for taking this really crazy person that we love, but it's really, we cannot handle it.
Yeah.
Take him off our hands, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of interesting stories attached to those places once you get to find out what was. In other words, I guess what I'm saying is the history of it, like the personal history.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, of the people that ended up there. And some really did need to be in there, by the way, in some of these asylums. But others were like, maybe you were just a peculiar kind of person and you ended up there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The cool thing, you know, that's one of my favorite places to investigate is, you know, old hospitals and asylums. Always been interested in that because, I mean, it's just cool looking. I mean, it really is, especially the ones that are gutted out and all that. So
yes, there's a lot of history. And you know what? Unfortunately, a lot of them are being, they're being torn down.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, because back then they used to build these things so huge that basically they were like a farm. Like, in other words, they were self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. So they would build them and basically farm on the land. And they're huge. And now they're like an eyesore because they would be too big to make use of them.
Is it like, are you talking about like a dairy farm or something like that where they are?
Right. What they would do is like, for example, up in New York and all these other places, like this is a lot of these hospitals were done like right after the Civil War.
Okay.
They were huge, but they were complexes. And if you were an inmate and you weren't violent, they would give you work to do. And they would either have chickens, cows, they would plant. They were like self-sustaining because they would give them hundreds of acres for the asylum. And but now let's say fast forward into more modern times where just little by little they started making laws like, hey, you're basically using the inmates like slave labor kind of deal. You can't do that. Yeah. Now they're so big that even if somebody was supposedly trying to come in there and renovate them, it's too difficult. What's the the one in Kentucky, the asylum in Kentucky that everybody goes to?
Oh,
not Rolling Hills.
Waverly.
Waverly.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a good idea what they did with it, but a lot of times, they you know, it's unsafe. In other words, to send people into some of these places, that's why they get torn down.
Yep, absolutely, 100%. I mean, a lot of them out there that aren't well known. That's the ones that get torn down, and you know, it is actually sort of a good thing because if they're not maintained or anything, or people are going in there and doing investigations, this and that. Yeah, they're dangerous, and plus you get a lot of drug dealers and this and that. Yes. You know, like what happened with Kuhn Hospital, there was a murder there.
Really? Yeah. What happened?
Yeah, it was Sharon Wilson. She was 67 years old, I believe. Mm-hmm. She, at the time, I was caretaker of that of Kuhn Hospital.
Right.
And she ended up getting kidnapped by Raphael McLeod. It was horrible. He ended up kidnapping her. He took her up to the hospital. I'm not going to get into full details. Just put it this way. She didn't make it out.
Okay.
They ended up catching him. Thank goodness. And he got what was coming to him. They put him in jail. Mm-hmm. And after he broke out of jail.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And he was like a full week. Vicksburg was like on lockdown because he was running around in Vicksburg somewhere. We ended up finding out he was in the swamps downtown Vicksburg.
Okay.
And he ended up one morning, ended up going to a residence at Fort Hills, part of the military park, Vicksburg Military Park. And while the man went out there to check the mailbox, he held him hostage, went back inside, tied the wife and him up. And there was a 2-year-old baby there. No, I'm sorry, 2-month-year-old baby that was in the crib. He was in the shower. I guess because all the mud and stuff being.
Hold on. Let me go take a shower.
Yeah, exactly. And he tied him up. Well, the wife got loose and went and got the .45. The husband's good .45 went in there and shot him. Husband got loose, went in there and unloaded a clip in his chest.
There you go. That's
he
it.
Got what was coming to him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
he would end up killing all three of them. But see, that's what going back to, you know, these abandoned.
Yeah, he might have come out of the shower and says, no witnesses.
I tell you what. I hope they got the reward money, you know.
Let me ask you something. The lady that he killed, was this a stranger to him or was this somebody that he knew?
100%
it was a stranger.
100% stranger. Wow. Yeah, you can look, like I said, just Google Hospital and it'll show all the stuff and you'll be
able to. You know what? I think that sometimes is one of the hardest things to understand because you see people do that. You know, you see the murders of passion, hate, revenge. You know, you got something with somebody. But when you got a stranger, or even like you don't have anything going on with this person, you can kill him. It's like,
Yeah, he was on drugs, 100%. I know that because 2 weeks before this happened.
Okay.
Me and a couple of paranormal investigators from another team, I think in Missouri, they came down and we were at the hospital and I just put no trespassing signs out and it was getting dark. And next thing you know, I look and there was an Escalade at the front of the building. I'm like, dude, I just put these damn no trespassing signs out. What's going on? Next thing you know, this dude jumps out the bottom, one of the bottom windows, and it's gutted just like Waverly. It's no windows, no nothing. He jumps out the bottom window and he walks over to me and he asked me for a cigarette. And I was like, dude, I don't smoke. And
like, what are you doing out here? You came out here to ask somebody for a cigarette? Really?
Man, he was casing the place out. That's
of course. Absolutely. He was.
But I looked in his eyes and they were real glassed over. And I told him, I was like, let's just go. He walked away and I was like, man, you better be careful. Those ghosts will get you. And he just looked at me, smirked and went walking in there by himself. All right. But it was him. It was Raphael.
That is an incredible story right there. In other words, he was talk about premeditation.
Yeah, exactly. But
yeah, and you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that because let's get back to the practical of people. I've heard of a lot of especially legend trippers who go to these places, and like you said, they run into people out there. People that are squatting or doing drugs or up to no good, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, that little adventure you thought you were gonna have, it's an adventure, all right.
Exactly.
What was it? There was a saying Louis L'Amour had that adventure was a romantic name for trouble. And that's basically what it turns out for them. That there, in other words, there's a practical, how can I say it, aspect to going doing paranormal investigations.
Mm-hmm.
what you said, if you go with a group or somebody there, better check out exactly where you're going, especially if it's remote or maybe it's abandoned.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's mostly, I mean, it's mostly, you know, the urbex, you know, side of it too.
Absolutely.
And that's so dangerous. I mean, I love it too, as well. I love going out.
Sure.
Going, checking these abandoned places out and doing photography.
Yeah.
And that, but go through the daytime. And if you can get, you definitely need to get permission no matter what.
Sure.
You know, so somebody know that's going to be out there. Heck, you can always even call, you know, call the cops and say, hey, look, I'm going to be out here, this and that. Somebody drives by. If y'all are free, could y'all just every now and then just swing by and just drive through, you know. It's all about safety for yourself and your team.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And people don't realize that a lot of these buildings, sometimes the flooring will give out.
Yep.
Things can fall on you. I know. And it doesn't, it's like, man, I hadn't seen that on the paranormal shows. It's like, yeah, but it can happen.
Absolutely. 100%. I watched a YouTube video a while back and it was crazy because it was this group, two people, they were doing the urbex thing and they went to go walk up the steps and somebody set a booby trap, had a steak knife on like a stick. Over that tripwire going up the steps, it would swing down, go right toward your face. And
there
guy
got
so close to getting hit by it.
That was talk about time to leave. There was another one that I saw that I'm not going to say was a prison here in Florida, but it's an abandoned prison, you know, like, but it's older, smaller prison. And these people were doing that urbex kind of deal.
Yep.
They went into one of these rooms or cells, I can't remember. And they found a dead guy there. Apparently it was a homeless guy. He died.
That's what happened with the Kuhn Hospital. Two people, ghost hunters, paranormal.
Right.
Well, they called themselves ghost hunters. They went up there and I think they were just doing the urbex thing. And they found her body there, which I'm glad they did go up there, you know.
Because this is how they've discovered.
That's how they discovered her. Because you'll see the news that says ghost hunters find abandoned body.
Interesting. Okay. So I imagine maybe she was missing and everybody couldn't figure out what happened to her.
Right. And
so absolutely.
It was only 2 days. They found her on the second day, which, I mean, it's horrible. I still pray for the family. She was a pillar of the community.
Right. And it's, people don't think that. In other words, this guy that was, like you said, he was out there. He already knew, I'm going to take somebody and this is the place I'm going to take them to. And he's thinking that same thing. It'll be a long time before anybody finds her.
Yep.
You know? And that's the thing is, well, not with DNA, but, you know, especially in the South, a corpse will deteriorate really quick.
Yes.
Right.
The humidity.
Yeah. And maybe they could get some type of DNA to identify them, but sometimes it's not that. That's really hard to find out. How did this person die? You know, if their soft tissue is gone and the muscle's gone and all it's gone, unless you stab them and they've got the nicks on the bone. And for future prosecution, it just complicates things really hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, if she was found 2 days later, there you go.
Oh yeah. They ended up getting him. I think they caught him in Leland, Mississippi, if I'm not mistaken, which is probably about 2 hours away from Vicksburg.
But yeah, this person, it was like one of these older homeless persons had laid down in one of these little cots in the corner. Because they, you know, that happens. They find a place to, like, basically not get rained on. How's that?
Yeah.
And they looked and they're like, and then when they pulled the blanket back, this person was dead.
That had to have been insane.
It was like one of them you can see runs off and is throwing up, like went down. He almost tripped down, like, you know, they have those metal stairs.
Yeah.
They almost like broke their neck going down those stairs. And the video is like, and one of them is like running out, like throwing up. Like, this is a guy, this is a man. But
yeah,
it was the shock of you find a dead person while you're, and it's like, you know what? And that happens. That can happen.
Yeah.
People don't realize a lot of times you will find people go out there. And I've even heard it of people that have gone camping and you find weird people out in the, you know, these campgrounds or parks.
Yeah.
That they're living off the grid, not intentionally, but because they have no other place to go. And they've had some weird and scary moments also with people out in the woods that this is where they're living out of, kind of deal.
Man, I listen to way too much Mortis Media to think about going camping anywhere.
I know. And some people is like, if I'm going, it's like, hey, I want one of these places where the park ranger lives on the, you know,
exactly.
Site.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
You never know. Have you watched Cocaine Bear yet?
Not yet. Not yet. But it's good.
Yes, it's funny. You got to watch it.
No, when I looked at it, it's like, oh my God, this is what, along the lines of Sharknado, Cocaine Bear, you know, it was one of those things like.
It was good. It definitely was. Sharknado's, I didn't like them, but Cocaine Bear definitely.
You know what? When the first time I saw Sharknado, and I think it was on Sci-Fi, it was a Sci-Fi movie. It's like, you've got to be kidding. Okay, this is scraping the bottom of the barrels for a movie. And then it took off. They made like 5 Sharknado movies.
I know.
It's incredible. Like, wait, okay, somebody actually funded this project. Okay. But, and how about, let me ask you, have you, because I know you mentioned that you were in Mississippi and Vicksburg. Like you said, there's a lot of Civil War battlefields.
Yeah.
Have you had any experiences out there while you've been on battlefields?
Well, I mean, we investigated the Vicksburg Military Park during the daytime because mm-hmm. the nighttime they want to charge $150 an hour. You know, because they have to pay the park ranger. They got to pay them overtime to be there.
I had heard of this. Okay.
Yeah. So I went out there during the daytime, got some interesting stuff, but nothing really, you know, blows your mind, you know.
Right.
But I'm sure if you went out there during the nighttime, probably could. I've seen so much stuff at Gettysburg, the battleground there, people investigating that.
Oh, yes.
And they've got some cool stuff.
Yes. Yes. You know what? I had heard of this. I had another paranormal investigator. This was a few years back out of California. Same thing. It was a historical site. And she's like, well, you know, we're debating it because we got to pay X amount. And I'm like, what for? And she's like, well, because they hire somebody to basically be there.
Yeah.
In case you like do something stupid or you hurt yourself. And I'm like, okay, so much for that. But Gettysburg is really interesting. It's really funny. One time I was out in Gettysburg. It was like nighttime. And you know, I haven't been there in a couple of years, but you know that it kind of like locks down pretty early.
Yeah.
So we went over to like a 7-Eleven, kind of those little quick shop things. Mm-hmm. And I see these people, they're in like this little van. And I'm like, those are ghost hunters. Sure enough, they were ghost hunters. I wasn't doing ghost hunting. And I said, where are you guys going? And they're telling me about this bridge out there,
yep.
which is kind of the urban myth where supposedly it's like a crying where the lady either killed her baby, the baby fell, that she threw the baby. One of those deals, you know.
Suicide Bridge?
I don't think it was Suicide Bridge.
Sacks Bridge?
Maybe. The haunting is attached to a lady and a baby kind of deal.
Interesting. You
know? So I said, and they're like, you want to come along? Because I was telling them, I did paranormal. I'm not doing one now, but it's like, okay, in the middle of Gettysburg, why not?
Absolutely.
Sure. So we drive out there, and it's one of these wooden, what's left. It's still a wooden bridge out there, by the way. And I was like, okay, you guys, I'll wait out here. I'm not about to drive on the wooden bridge and end up down there. No, you know, I it was very dark. And it, of course, there's no ambient light out there. It was dark.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting like further off. I drove. I just stayed in my vehicle, like looking at them. I say, well, scream if you need help. And they're looking at me like, thanks, lady. I was with my husband and he's looking at me because he's like, you're very encouraging, aren't you? And I was like, oh, whatever. You know, so they drive out there and they just stopped, turn everything off in the middle of the bridge. And
yeah,
they kind of went out there and this is the thing, you know, when you have water movement, sometimes that's hard. It throws you off if you're trying to do any type of EVP.
Yes, absolutely.
100%. It's a problem. So they weren't out there and then they came back and they're like, I said, look, guys, you know, you might have picked up something and you didn't hear, but that water is going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, supposedly there were sightings of this lady along the bridge. And I said, sometimes it's all in the timing. You know, after that, I left because it was they were doing their thing. Plus, mm-hmm. I was really tired. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in Gettysburg, there's a lot of. And I'm going to tell you another little story. Even though I'm interviewing you, I'll go ahead and give you a Gettysburg story. One of the times I'm going there, I went and we stayed. There's a little motel that's right across the street from the Union Cemetery. Mm-hmm. All right. It's a little one story motel. It's been there a long time. Mm-hmm. So we roll in like at the end of the day. We drove straight from Florida. And we came into Gettysburg, one of those deals where you just like pull in, get the key, because this is how old it was. You know, where they still have keys instead of the.
Oh, yeah. The card.
This was a while back. This was over 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So. And so funny. This is a typical motel room, a big room, and then off to the, you know, you got your vanity, the separate bathroom area. And I'm like, I was tired. And my husband was, we were going out there. He was a police officer. And he's like very no nonsense, right? He's like, doesn't believe in this, but he, I'm dragging him along.
Yeah.
So he gets the next morning. I have this really weird dream, by the way. I have this dream where I see a lady, you know, those people that clean the bedrooms, the rooms that push along those little carts full of all their things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm having this really weird dream where I see this lady. She's Hispanic looking. She comes out of like a cloud, and she comes with this, pushing this little cart. Mm-hmm. She like bends over me, and like I'm in the bed, like, but it's a dream. And she's looking at me, and she like looks at me, nods her head, and just like sucks back. Okay. The next morning I wake up, my husband's like giving me a stick. I was like, what's wrong? He goes, you were sleeping like the dead. Didn't you hear that? I'm like, hear what? He's telling me that all night long, somebody was doing like this on the toilet. Somebody was jerking the toilet, like making it flush. He was something, somebody was flushing the toilet. Oh, I said, are you sure it wasn't gurgling? You know how sometimes toilets will gurgle?
Yeah, yeah.
He's giving me that. I like, I know it was being flushed. And I go, didn't you go and look? And he goes, no. And he was mad because I slept through this, of course, because I was really tired. So I said, okay, you know, and he's like all upset because he was a non-believer, but kind of. So I said, why don't you go to the office? And goes to the office, comes back. And I said, what did they tell you? He goes, you're not going to believe it. And I'm like, this is one of the most haunted rooms. Really? Who? And they go, one of the people that used to work here. Really? A lady? It was one of those things where I hadn't told him what my dream was. Nice. I had no expectations of seeing the cleaning lady ghost. How's that? Because this is right across from the Union Cemetery for that they had made for the soldiers.
Yeah.
None. Like I said, and he was so upset because of the bathroom, you know, toilet flushing kind of deal.
I bet you were upset too because you weren't able to get up.
I was. When I woke up, I knew this dream is, there's something to it. This slide, yeah. Never seen this lady. And if you're telling me I'm dreaming about soldiers, I'll get it because I'm in the middle of Gettysburg. But a cleaning lady with a cart, it's like in Gettysburg. Oh, like a modern. And I could tell, you know how when you see somebody, she had like a 1980s kind of look.
Yeah.
You know, the way they're dressed and their hair kind of. And it's like, all right. And she's like looking at me like when one of those deals, like, you know, they shake their, nod their head and like look at you, like examine you. And then she pulls right back with her little cork. But yeah, sometimes my point being that sometimes you go to these historic places and you encounter paranormal that are not the usual suspects because everybody goes to Gettysburg, obviously, for Civil War stuff.
Right, exactly.
And you just never know through the years, really, what you're going to run across.
Yep.
Has that ever happened to you where you've gone expecting something and it's totally different when you get there?
Yeah, I have. I mean, it was mainly, it wasn't, you know, sitting here trying to investigate for, you know, human spirit and end up being a different kind of manifestation. Okay. You know, like USS Salem, you know, we have a lot of stuff that's happened to us there, like elemental wise.
Really?
Yeah.
On a ship.
Yeah. On a ship, elemental, a lot of shadow. Ooh. A lot of shadow figures out there.
Interesting. What do you think the source of the elemental is? Are we talking water?
Oh, fire. Or fire elemental. Fire.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? What happened?
It's just multiple experiences out there that's done happen and people just picked up on them. You know, me, I've never really noticed it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've always, you know, saw the shadow figures and just crazy, you know, equipment and stuff going off. But it's okay. Been multiple, you know, mediums that's been out there and have picked up on a fire elemental there. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So
were there any fires ever on this ship? Like, or anything? Or what? I'm just trying to like.
I think there was a fire there a while back, wasn't it? During the haunted house?
No, yep.
Yeah, it was.
Or even fire. When it was in use? Because sometimes you hear of some of these ships.
I don't think it was whenever it was in use because I think mm-hmm. it was just a hospital. Used as a hospital. But during whenever they held a haunted house, there was a fire that happened there and they couldn't figure out how it happened.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. Yeah, yeah. Like I said, sometimes what you get, you know, is not what you expect.
Yep.
Definitely. And I sometimes that makes for very case in point, when you have an experienced somebody, it's better to have somebody's experience. Have you ever, as a group, David, gone to a place that you said, this is, I'm not going to say out of a depth, but where you've backed out your team because you think this is not what I expected, or I need to come back with different set of people because it's darker than what I thought?
Yeah, that was at Rocky Springs Cemetery. You know, I know we don't have that much time. I'll go ahead and spit this out real quick.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, Rocky Springs. Well, actually, not the cemetery, but the town. It was old town, and it was, I think it had like 500 people in there, something like that. Mm-hmm. But people started getting sick. They started getting yellow fever, and even kids and all that started dying off, and the town just went, you know, just extinct. Then everything started eroding, this and that. It's a crazy story about it. It really is. But Rocky Springs, we went out there and we were investigating. We were on one of the main trails where some of the houses and the bank and stuff was. Mm-hmm. And it was a full moon that night. I was sitting there on the trail, three of the other investigators on the right side of me. And I got an EMF detector and I just happened to look. I looked up at the moon. I looked back down. And next thing you know, this black mass was like 5 foot in front of me and just manifested probably about up to here to me.
Uh-huh.
Dropped my stuff. I'm like, oh crap. And right after that happened, it just disappeared. The girl, one of the girls beside me, they saw it too. And she started just bawling, you know, cause I told them, do not run. Whatever you do, you can get hurt, you know?
Yeah.
Well, after that happened, we started hearing footsteps behind us, you know, on the leaves crunching. Mm-hmm. Footsteps in front of us. Hold on one sec.
Don't worry about it.
What happened with that? But anyway, we heard footsteps in front of us, behind us, and it got closer and closer, and it sounded like multiple footsteps. And I'm sitting here thinking, what happens whenever this gets all this energy gets close to me? I mean,
right?
What could happen? But anyway, I cut it short, and I hauled ass out of there, and I told him, I was like, I'm not going back here. I haven't been back there to this day.
So you got your feeling, what is it, that Spidey sense told you?
Get the hell out. And we did. But that place, yeah. I wasn't expecting that. And I really do think it was a dark energy there.
Sure, sure. And you know what? And then on the last note, you know, because I know that a lot of, this is for the paranormal investigators, you know, that sometimes go, in, or even legend trippers into cemeteries. Mm-hmm. I tell them because I've seen this, I've run across this a lot. Where people don't realize that a lot of times what you find there is not the dead, what you would think, the dead people that are buried there. These cemeteries are sometimes used for invocations from these occult rites. And they open portals, they summon things, they do. And sometimes that's why people, you know, you go to a cemetery and you think, well, what's the worst that can happen? Some of the things are done or thrown. I've seen ritual items left in cemeteries or places where you've seen that they've been doing something. And that's something that people have to be careful of. Well, we were talking originally about getting a dark attachment.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that, you know, you could, it could be, that could be the source.
Yep. 100%. I mean, look at Cemetery 2 in New Orleans.
Oh, well, you know what? And it's really funny because that now, from what I understand, you have to pay to go into the cemeteries.
Yeah, you do. Know.
Whereas once upon a time, you could just like stroll along.
Well, how much is it? $15.
Yeah. No, it's not cheap. It's not like, oh, a buck a head. No. Who was it? Somebody went there not too long ago and they were innocently, and they were like, and they kind of, and they also very careful about you. Like, in other words, if you went in there, let's say you paid the $15 and you wanted to live stream or pick up that they kind of get that you're trying to produce something, they're not going to let you.
They'll let it off real quick.
Yeah. They'll cut you off. So yeah, everybody's trying to cash in on the paranormal thing, but there's plenty of places. Let me tell you something. Sometimes the most unlikely place is really haunted. And the ones that have a bad reputation, if they were ever haunted, the spirits are like, I'm out of here, man. I'm tired of this.
Exactly.
You know, and all they've got is just a reputation. That's the only thing that you're going to find there. Yep. So, David, because for my podcast listeners, what is the best place that they can find you?
Just get on Facebook, look for David Childers, Google David Childers Ghost Hunter. Check out also It's Haunted Network. It's on Facebook. Actually, okay. Me and Chris are co-founders of it, and us three, Christina, Chris, me, and yeah, we actually have a show. We had a show on there, and we every now and then we'll do it.
Okay.
That's probably the best place. TikTok, David Childers Paranormal Addict. check okay. that out too. As well. All right. We have a lot of our crazy ghosty adventures and okay. Some cool evidence that we picked up.
Let me ask you, do you have any events coming up? And I know a lot of people say, but believe it or not, this is prep time for Halloween.
For let me get my list.
yeah, of course.
All right, let me get my list real quick. So far, give me a second. Okay, let's see. Event-wise, we have actually doing an event tonight. Chris is hosting really? An event. Yeah, and we're getting ready to investigate Murdoch Whitney and Isaac Moore's house. That's why they're over here. They were like, hey, we'll come by and see you right down the road. So we're going to do an investigation there tonight.
Okay.
Let's see. April 1st, we're going to have an event in Salem, Lucky Balcomino. And I'm one of the guests there. Let's see. April 20th, we have Pennhurst Asylum in Fort Mifflin. Okay. Pennhurst is sold out for Fort Mifflin.
Let me tell you, Pennhurst, that's a scary place.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Pennhurst is, that's, oof, that energy there must be like, what?
No, no, it's insane. We got some cool mm-hmm. evidence. It's actually on my TikTok.
Okay.
Fort Mifflin still got 3 tickets left. You won't get on my page, inbox me okay. or whatever. I can give you the information. Let's okay. see. We got May 6th in Salem, an event. Me and Stormy is throwing on an event there. I'm a guest there as well.
Okay.
Wilson Castle, May 26th is an event. June 3rd, Wilson Castle actually is sold out. Sorry about that.
okay.
And June 17th, Isaac Moore's house. July 1st, USS Salem. July 8th, Hell House. Gettysburg Bash on July 14th. Y'all got to check out Gettysburg Bash if you haven't been to it.
Yeah, that's right there on the anniversary of Gettysburg, right? Am I wrong? Yes.
Well,
I know it's in that July date. I'm not.
It exactly. might be. It might be.
Yes.
That's a big paranormal event.
Yes.
Definitely
yes.
check that out. Mm-hmm. July 1st, USS Salem. July 8th, Hell House. Let's see. Sleepy Hollow Paracon is going to be on September 16th. That's in, you know, Sleepy Hollow. Who Sleepy would not Hollow. Want to go to a Paracon in Sleepy Hollow, New York?
Of all places, Sleepy that, Hollow.
That's another big one that's out there, too, as well. And actually, Chris is the one putting it on.
That's so, great.
Yep. Make sure y'all check it out.
Let me tell you something. That's one of my favorite movies is the Sleepy Hollow, the one with Johnny Depp of all the incarnations. That's like my favorite version. That's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
Yes.
She's over here getting excited. Me too. Me too. Me too.
Yes. I mean, the atmosphere, you know, Tim Burton really nailed that one on yes. that movie. It was very good.
Yep.
But yeah, there's a lot of, that dates back to revolutionary times, colonial times. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going there. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, David. It has been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And I'm going to email you that show that they asked for a casting call on. It might be the one you're talking about. It might not be. And if it's not, well, there you go. All right. Because I get them all the time. And it's like, yeah, you know, I know people, but my friends are going to start looking weird at me like, really?
That's awesome.
So right. Take care. And until next time, it's been wonderful to speak to you, okay?
All right, it's great speaking to you too, and I had a blast. Thank you.
Yeah, likewise. We got to share. We got to come back and do some paranormal talk again.
Absolutely.
Paranormal chit-chat.
Absolutely, I'm totally game.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. I love talking to him because he's been doing this for a long time. And it's really funny because like I said, sometimes you go ghost hunting and you get what you want. And then sometimes you get nothing. And then other times you go and you get the unexpected, what you weren't prepping for. The what? Yeah. Hey, I heard there was a little girl ghost running around. And the next thing is you got a 10-foot shadow man walking. You get a visual and that's like, what happened to the little girl ghost? You know, so and one of these days I gotta run somebody down on a guest so that we can talk about what I said about children ghosts. And the reason why I say this is God knows I've interviewed, I've read, I've had experiences, I've interviewed people like personally with sightings of children ghosts. And some of them are kind of legit because of the way they're seen and there's an actual history and I'm always very, very suspicious, very careful when, especially in the older places, where the signing is, this is a child, and we're going to leave this for the kid and that for the kid, and everybody's all, oh. I was like, yeah, all right, but I'd rather, how's this? It's an entity that will take the trouble or has the ability to disguise itself as a child. In other words, it understands the psychology of, if I appear as myself, as what I am, it's no way, you know, people are going to run screaming. But they know the human psychology of disguising itself as a child, which will immediately bring down the whoever it is, their guard. If you run across something, an entity that has that, how's that, that I, the maliciousness, the wherewithal to pull in that, you've got a very intelligent, very dark haunting. Yeah. Yes, you do. And those are the ones that become real problems. But let's face it, even most regular ghosts, spirits, whatever, well, I want to say with ghosts, if they're human, this is human, they'll appear like what they were. You know, an old man, a young woman. Sometimes they're scary because sometimes you will have a sighting. Some of them appear in their death state, in other words. Some of them look like what, if they were in an accident or in a fire or if there was some traumatic death, you know, they'll appear that way. And that's pretty intense. And then others will look like what they look like when they were alive, maybe old. You know, I've heard of some sightings that even though they're not like scarred, but you could tell that what you're looking at is a corpse, right? You know, hollowed out cheeks. Maybe even the eyes are gone and what you've got is basically a black circle, you know. And even some of them will, you know, I've heard of people having sightings where it's basically the, what this person might look like if in their coffin. I'm not going to say pieces of meat are hanging out, but you could tell they're desiccated. That I've seen. But when you get, but you see, they come around as what they are, whatever they are. When you see something that wants to and has the ability to disguise itself, That's a big, big problem. Big, huge problem. And case in point, I got to get back to him and find out who or watch the show that's going to come out. Who's the culprit that he's got running around in his house for a year? All right. And like I said, I had done investigations, like I said, throughout the years where I had different groups. And sometimes some of us like lived far away, but we would get together for this one investigation. We would stay in touch. And all of us at some point or others, we had hangers on. But let me explain. These hangers on, like I said, when you do this kind of work for a while, you become sensitive. If you're not out and out psychic, you develop something. And all these spirits kind of like, no, there's a good chance that this person might be able to hear or see me, or there's affinity, you look like somebody they know or whatever. And I've had where people will say, you know what? I've had this spirit. I can feel it. I can sense it. But after 2 or 3 days, they're out of there. If you've got good protection and do not engage with them. You know, in other words, you know there's nothing at your house. Your house is clear. And all of a sudden, you're getting either the sightings or a little noise or the feeling of being watched. And it's like you ignore them. It's like, yeah. Or the most you could say is at the beginning is like, get out of here, you're dead, bye. And then that's it. No more communications, no EVPs, no Ouija planchette, nothing. You ignore them. Like kids, you know, or like the panhandler, that after a while they just walk away because you're not going to engage with them. You're not. That's happened to everybody. Everybody that's done paranormal work, they will have this experience. If there was something there, of course. And it's a tough thing to do. When what you want to do is you want to engage it or get that thing. But this is the thing. It's different when you're at that location. Whereas once this thing has come and is at your house, everything changes. Because basically once you engage in that dialogue, you're laying out the welcome mat. It's like, oh, you can hear me. Oh, you can see me. And by this, I'm not saying it's anything malevolent. Because again, contrary to what a lot of people think, there's a lot of what they call free floaters. These are spirits that are not tied down to a location. These are the ones that when people do investigations, they kind of get that, it gets out like a bulletin, you know. There's going to be psychic people there, sensitive people, and they come around. They might have nothing to do with that location that you're investigating, nothing. And they come around hoping that somebody will be able to hear or see them. And since they're not really attached to that place, they come sometimes that just something about a certain person calls out to them. And they follow them home. And I've said this before, sometimes it's as easy as you're the one person in the team whose their defenses are down. As in, you're tired, you're coming down with a cold, you're stressed out at work, or something stressful is going on, like a momentary thing. You know, it happens to everybody. You have moments where you're great, but then you have a few days, oh, I'm coming down with something, or I'm really stressed out at work, or I'm worried about something. You are the weak link in the chain for the team, and that's why they pick you. But again, and then let's fast forward. You're back home. You think you see something out of the corner of your eye. But let's face it, after a while, everybody knows the hum or the rhythm of your house, of where you live, whatever it is, whether it's a room, an apartment, a house, whatever. You know what are the noises. That's the ebb and flow, depending on the time of day or night. And then you'll start maybe hearing something that's like, hey, wait a minute, that's not, what is that? Or maybe your animals are wigging out that normally they wouldn't. A bark, you know, that kind of thing. The first idea that you get once you're realizing, okay, somebody, or you get that feeling of somebody staring at me, or, you know, I've heard of investigators, somebody pulls their hair from the back, or they kind of feel like, you know, when you're standing and you kind of have somebody that's, you know, these people that have no idea of body boundaries, and they're standing too close to you. And even if they're not touching you, you feel like, man, you're too close to me. Well, they'll get that feeling. So much so that sometimes, okay, this is a cautionary tale. Do not engage that spirit. Don't talk to it. I said before, unless you go, you're dead, get out of here. I don't want you here. Leave. That's it. Finito. Don't try an EVP. Don't try to find out their name. Don't try nothing. Let them go. And they will eventually leave. If you keep on, you might satisfy your curiosity, but that's not a good idea. It's not. It's not, because again, this is where you live. This is where you live. This is where you spend all your time. And one thing, and I've said it before, is as a ghost hunter of many, many, many years, this is not only personal experience. This is conversations you have with other people. You have to have a really, really strong boundary between where you live, like as in where you sleep, you know, and that work that you do, you know, where, hey, because if not, it just wrecks your life. If you let it, it can. People go, boy, that's overly, that you're dramatizing there a lot, aren't you? I'm not. Okay. And it's almost something like what David was describing. What's incremental, it starts off really slow and it's not a big deal. But if you've engaged in it and stays around, it starts to ramp up and it will get darker. It's not like the movies that you see, like within 72 hours, you know, plasma's coming off the wall and, you know, you're having sightings of this 10-foot. Sometimes it just builds up little by little by little, you know. The shadow that you saw cross from one room to the other, next thing you know, it's standing at the door of your room. Next thing you know, it's standing at the foot of your bed. Next thing you know, you feel something lying down next to your bed. But that doesn't happen one night to the other. It could take weeks, months. And then, see, when that stuff happens, that's when it stops being fun, when paranormal investigations stop being fun. It's like, wait a minute. This is not what I thought. It's like, I don't want this to be happening. It's like, yeah. Oh, you mean that this is not like what you saw in the movie where somebody came and poof, did something, a ritual, and poof, it's gone. Or you know, or the TV shows where they roll in, they do the investigation, and then they pick up all their stuff and they're gone. You know, and maybe in the middle of it, they might call maybe an exorcist or a demonologist or another ghost hunter, or whoever they call, you know, like, hey, we're going to. But if, at the end of the day, all these people pick up all their crap and they leave. They're off to their next adventure, their next location. So some people, when they find themselves in those scenarios, they're like, hey, I never saw the show where 6 months later, I have to deal with this. Something similar to what's happened to David, you know, where he's calling in. Thankfully, he's got somebody who's going to come in there and give him a hand, because he knows what he's doing. He's not stupid. And he even said, I tried doing my own thing and it didn't work. Or like what he said, I love that. Where he said, yeah, it quieted down, but then it came back. Then it came back. And that will happen. I've talked about that. Sometimes when you do anything, it's not over. You have to keep doing whatever you did to keep whatever it is away, not trying to come back, away. Whether it's smudging, sprinkling of holy water. Like I said, I mentioned this the other day. There's an exorcist in the Catholic Church. His name is Father Ripperger. Real. And I was listening to him, and when I heard this, I was like, hey man, this is a great idea. I never thought of this at all. He talked about properties where you could get salt licks, get them blessed, and bury them in the corners of the four corners of your property as a deterrent. I was like, man, that is a great idea. I mean, if you've got that property, you know, and you know, a lot of in the South or even the Low Country, a lot of the root work that was done had to do with burying things in the ground. For different purposes, but yeah, that is some type of stuff that can be done. So yeah, very interesting talk with David Childers. Again, I'm going to have a link on the credits of the show where you could find him on Facebook. And as you can see, he's got a lot of events coming up, and already into September, because let's face it, we're going to go into April, believe it or not. This is the ramp up time for Halloween. And for the fall, as far as these cons and these shows and people prepping, because put these things together takes a while. And it's great. Yeah. Yeah. That's the way it is. So until next time, guys, it has been absolutely wonderful to speak to you. And thank you for being part of my audience.